Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
To be honest, I never want to see that part of myself again.
To which part are you referring?
To the part of me that got pleasure from destroying those plants in the Aeroponics Bay. To the part of me that was tempted to go with Tannis. I never realized I had such dark impulses.
Without the darkness, how would we recognize the light? Do not fear your negative thoughts. They are part of you. They are a part of every living being, even Vulcans.
You?
The Vulcan heart was forged out of barbarism and violence. We learned to control it, but it is still part of us. To pretend it does not exist is to create an opportunity for it to escape. Let us begin.
We should start talking about Star Trek.
Okay. Hey, Jesse, you called it. It's time to talk about Star Trek.
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek.
What do you think about that, Dan? Do you think it's time to talk about Star Trek?
Yes.
It's got shit.
Is it going to aggravate you if I talk like this the entire time?
Maybe for a little bit.
Not exactly.
Do you all want to get welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast?
Yes.
Are you all ready for the 216th episode of the It's Got Star Trek?
That's what I have, too.
What are we going to discuss on this week's It's Got Star Trek?
It's me,
This is holiday mania. Holiday mania, we are recording this.
Do you have holiday mania?
The day after Thanksgiving.
And touch so it.
Each one of us has a touch of the old holiday mania. That won't matter to people in the future.
Yes,
or to people in countries that don't celebrate Thanksgiving.
There's people in countries that don't celebrate Thanksgiving.
They're like, what are you guys talking
There's
about?
Future people
what
who
is that
will listen to this episode at a point in time that is not necessarily coinciding with the United States holiday of Thanksgiving.
But.
Because then there's a...
Canada has Thanksgiving in October.
Touch it.
Yes, they have one too, yeah.
But it's like in October.
Touch it.
That will help you inhibit your giggles.
Holiday madness. Okay.
Forget right. These people.
Okay. Well, don't shoot your audio wad too early in the podcast.
Yeah. Right.
Touch it.
This is one of those episodes.
Don't tell me.
We're gonna be doing a lot of stretching out.
Don't tell me. I know what I'm doing. I got all right. It all under control.
Okay. All right. I had presumed that you would understand that my statement was not meant as an actual critique or directive towards you.
I took full offense to what you just said, and now you're going to have to spend the rest of the episode making me not angry at you anymore.
Right. Oh, okay.
You ruined the podcast.
Dan set up an excellent little plot line to follow here.
evening. My overreaction did not ruin the podcast. Your initial action ruined the podcast.
Well, okay. So let's get to business. This is a silly start.
It's all your fault.
Probably in part because, I don't know, even though this episode is highly rated online, I found it a little boring. But yes, we are this week discussing Star Trek Voyager Season 2.
Yes, I know.
Cold Fire.
Apparently so.
That's the name of the episode, Cold Fire.
Oh.
It's kind of a stupid name.
Well, we'll get into that. We have all manner of opportunity to get into that.
It didn't seem like they really. I thought they. I don't know. It seemed like they were going in one direction, and then they just kind of never went in that direction. Yeah. And it was just fucking weird. Okay. Yeah.
Hold that thought.
No, I wasn't going into it.
Is
I was
it
just,
time for news?
I was just giving a preview of my thoughts.
And they're. They're excellent thoughts.
What's so funny about that?
Because I'm just remembering when you were setting up the whole plot line of that you and I were going to have some sort of tete-a-tete, you know?
Fuck you!
Holiday madness. Yes, Jesse's got it right. News 'em ups. There's not really many news 'em ups this week.
Are they on the rad?
Otherwise,
I don't know of any other way they could be.
I did want to mention that next week we're giving Dan's bespoke podcast topic selection algorithm a break, a holiday break.
Oh, are we? Did we talk about this?
Yes, we did.
Which holiday?
We've manually selected two episodes of the next two episodes in our ongoing review of the Star Trek: The Animated Series.
Oh yeah.
Multiple conversations.
It's all coming back to me.
And those two episodes are season 2, episode 2, BEM, and season 2, episode 3, The Practical Joker.
Those sound are both, stimulating.
They are. They will be stimulating episodes. So you know ahead of time, well in advance, that that's what we'll be discussing next week. And then we'll only have 3 episodes after that, and then we'll have concluded the entire series review of Star Trek: The Animated Series.
But there's still so much Star Trek.
Exactly, but we can at least close down that series. And
your future has already begun.
Yeah, that's like the least.
So yeah, so keep an eye out for BEM and The Practical Joker. Watch those two prior to next week. Mm-hmm. And then enjoy the podcast next week. During this week's second break, we're going to discuss why they might have named the caretaker's companion Suspiria.
Mm.
We'll discuss some options there. And finally, just a
Suspiria.
Mysterium ups.
Just a reminder.
Suspiria.
Suspiria.
You can of course email us at feedback@discussstartrek.com if you have any questions or comments or this, that, or the other thing. And you may send in a voice recorded message, an audio recording. You can either record it yourself or you can go to itsgotstartrek.com/record and you will get up to 90 seconds. And that is a limitation.
Have you tried that?
Of the free service.
Is it cool? Does it work?
It does. It works cool. Yeah, but you only get 90 seconds.
Time from now on.
The system shuts you down after 90 seconds, and that's what you get. But yeah,
turbulent.
We'd love to hear from you all, either comments about the podcast generally, or if you want to have any contribution to the discussion of BAM or The Practical Joker next week.
BAM.
This is a good opportunity for you to send it in an audio recording.
And remember,
try to maintain your emotional equanimity.
At all times.
At all times.
Vulcans don't giggle.
Okay. With that, let's
inhibit your giggles.
Dive into our fulsome, no doubt fulsome discussion.
Fulsome.
Of Star Trek Voyager Season 2, Episode 10.
Look deeper.
Cold fire. So cold.
Yes.
Did you find this an exciting episode? Were you engaged fully the entire time?
With this Tannis business,
did you have to go back and watch certain scenes multiple times because you kept getting distracted because it was not that engaging?
So originally I thought the Tannis plot was going to go in a direction of, because he was condescending to her and saying how naive she was and like, you've got so much to learn. I used to be, you know, we used to be naive, trying to put her in this
Compton box.
Typical 14-year-old.
He was trying to put himself in a position above her. And so I thought it was going to end up like something where he was going to try to be manipulating her into like doing something for him. And I thought ultimately he would be trying to he wanted to be with her and that kind of thing. I thought it would be some kind of plot where they would have a way to get them home, Voyager home. But in order to do that,
Kes had to make out with the dude.
Kes had to fall in love with the dude. And then Janeway would be like, no, Kes, you can't force who you love. Yeah. We will give us all up for you. And I'm like, and that would have made more
sense. I mean, that's a story I want to see.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Again, with the audience.
Voyager in a nutshell.
What the audience is missing at home is Dan's Janeway impression has a physical component to it.
Yes.
That really oughtn't be missed. It's a shame we don't currently have a video of it. Maybe we'll do a special down the line.
And I thought they would put more into this idea of Tannis trying to manipulate Kes by, you know, being condescending and sort of like that kind of situation. But it didn't seem like they really focused on anything at all, any of that at all.
At the end of the episode, I was thinking about it. I was like, so we're right back where we started with, I know they were thinking of it as literary bookends with Kes and Tuvok doing their mental meditation work business exercises at the beginning of the episode and at the end. And it is a bookend, but it really for me, it was like super reset button bookend.
Yeah, there's nothing ended up happening out of the whole thing. Yeah,
Kes's powers have even gone away. She's like, I don't know, the guy's gone, I can't do it anymore. The ultimate reset button.
Lame. The first part where I was when Tannis does this with Kes, he goes, you know so little about your own people, there's so much for you to learn about yourself, about the galaxy, being here on this ship is holding you back. So it's like, it almost seems like he's trying to make her doubt herself to be reliant on him, you know, and it's belittling and manipulative. And you can see when he says that, she looks kind of sad. And I thought there would be more like manipulation of her.
It's just not for as interesting a thing as you suggested.
Right. I thought there would be more luring her over to his side more.
What a silly bunch of aliens.
You know, and then when she's... When she's like, I'm a member of the crew, he's like, ha ha, I suppose we were like you once, ha ha, you know? And yeah, they sort
Who
of
came up with it.
And I'm not even sure why they did that part, because it didn't play anything into the rest of this episode. This whole concept of him manipulating her just didn't go anywhere. It didn't end up in any kind of intrigue. It just kind of ended up where it turns out the caretaker's mate was just pissed off at them because Voyager was a big bully ship, which, by the way, by the end of the episode, Voyager did nothing to, like, sort of destroy that reputation that they had. Now, maybe the caretaker mate, Suspiria, Washington,
D.C.
Suspiria. Maybe Suspiria forgave them, but I don't think anyone else, like, other than Suspiria, like, Voyager didn't do anything for their reputation by the end.
Yeah, we'll march through some of these things, because there's a lot to unwrap there, but I largely agree. Every time I don't enjoy an episode, and really, I barely remembered this episode. And I've seen Voyager a bunch of times, but I don't know. I found this. There were a few key moments that were memorable, but
I've
overall,
seen it somewhat recently, so I sort of remember.
Yeah.
It.
Bring the fire.
But I feel bad when I watch an episode of Star Trek and I'm just kind of like, ugh, because I know there are people who enjoy it, and I definitely don't want to take away from anyone's enjoyment of the episode. And I can see, frankly, why there's a lot to like in this episode. It's just too disjointed.
Yeah, it just
like
felt aimless. It just felt aimless. It just felt like I don't know why anything's happening. And like you said, Patrick, by the end, it's just a reset button. So nothing really got accomplished.
And it almost calls attention to itself in that. And another thing it calls attention to that I kept really thinking about this episode, which I hadn't in a while, was what really was the whole deal with the Ocampa? The Ocampans. And Jesse, you were alluding to these aliens. Because, first of all, I think that they have an inbuilt problem with this short lifespan.
Yeah, it's lame, dude.
Because
how do they still exist as a species?
Well, okay, people can exist, that's fine. They grow quickly, that's fine.
In a way, only an Ocampa can.
From a sci-fi perspective, yes, it is super interesting, the concept of a short-lived people, and do they live life to the fullest or whatever? I don't know. You could do all sorts of stuff, but they kind
of a bunch of jerks.
First of all, they kind of don't do much of that stuff. But also, it's inherently depressing, right? From the audience perspective, like take away the sci-fi aspect of it, just from a literary sense.
My father lived to be 20.
You're developing a new Star Trek race, and the short-lived thing is inherently depressing. And then, of course, the whole creepy Neelix thing that Neelix is dating like a 2-year-old.
Good Lord, right? And how about make them like super long-lived? How about that?
Well, I mean, they already have that with like the Vulcans and the Klingons and some other people.
Just humans live a long time.
Now, do we know that Ocampans before this episode were was it knowledge that Ocampans can do yes. Mind talks?
I want to talk to you alone.
Like, was that something that they could do beforehand?
I can't specifically remember the mind talk, but I know going back as far as the caretaker, the pilot.
It was developed maybe along the way.
Because Tuvok recognized that.
He recognized that she had some mind powers, because this is only the second season. And so she's able to, he knew that she could do some kind of mind meldy kind of stuff.
And Kes has done in Caretaker and other places, she did some sort of, almost instinctual psychic response power.
Don't
stuff.
Touch the sideburns.
But if you're doing an episode, a one-off episode about Space stumbling creep. Across a race of people and they have a short lifespan, and then you can do an interesting story about that, fine. Yeah. I think they shot themselves in the foot a little bit by trying to create a new long-term character. We know it didn't kind of work out that way. But then with, as you mentioned, Dan, with all the psychic powers and stuff, the problem I have with psychic power stuff more generally and how it was presented in this episode is normally... In Star Trek, when you are presenting an alien as having some sort of ability, some sort of trait that differentiates itself from regular old human type people, right? When that trait is used as a mechanism to explore the human condition in some way,
right?
You know, logic with the Vulcans, capitalism with the Ferengi, warriors with
honor,
the
honor shaming.
Yeah, that's what you do with it, right? I don't know what they weren't exploring any moral issue with Kes. It was just, like you said, it was just sort of like an episode of watching somebody get gaslit for a while.
Yeah, right.
And then in the end, she was like powerful enough to not get
For some reason, she was just powerful by the end. Yeah. Right. Because she believed in herself or something. I don't know. But like, yeah, that's why
then the powers went away to reset the story.
Yeah, that's why, you know, to reiterate, that's why I thought like this whole thing of him trying to like belittle her and condescend her was going to end up in some kind of luring her over. And then there would be going to be some kind of like major decision, you know, that she would have to make by the end that was going to result in something emotional. But there was no decision made. There was just like, yeah.
Because the decision that was presented was whether or not she would go join the Ocampa, which, by the way, we don't see any others. And I guess that was presumably a budget thing, so they wouldn't have to build a bunch of sets or extras or whatever. But it did, I think, also undermine the story a little bit that our primary interaction with these quote-unquote 300 other Ocampa is just through Tanis. Even though Tanis is, I mean, he's great. Gary
that
Graham
dude was
is
like,
great.
No, don't come onto my thing. I'm gonna visit your show.
When you have a kid that speaks lines in a show, do they also have to get like a SAG card after that too, or is it only for adults? Like,
I presume there's, if not SAG,
you're asking the wrong guy.
Because you're like, when your kid is an actor.
No, well, I'm saying if you give some, because you know,
father, may I act
you
in
know,
a play?
You know how sometimes in shows like people don't get equity? Lines. When people don't get lines and the idea being like, oh, they didn't want to, you know, have to sign up, give them the SAG money. Yeah. I'm wondering if the same applies to kids because there's been some episodes.
Hey, you know what? I'm sure TV producers in the 1990s were treating these child stars extremely well.
Yeah.
I have no doubt about that.
Anyways, there was no dilemma that occurred. There was just kind of stuff that happened. I don't know.
Okay, why don't we go through some of the stuff that happened because you're right. It was just a bunch of stuff that happened.
Sporocystian.
It was rendered largely meaningless at the end.
Sporocystian.
But let's start right at the beginning.
Sporocystian.
Sporocystian toxin.
They did not have.
10 light years away.
They did not have a previously on Star Trek. They had a weird, I don't know how to describe it.
It was weird.
Did you record
it? When he died.
I recorded this part.
When he died.
It was and they actually credit Majel Barrett as the narrator.
Yeah.
It's like narrating the beginning review of what happened. And that's, by the way, no, real quick, that's a bad sign if you need to, in a show that does not normally have a recap, and if it does have a recap, like, I don't know. I found this recap weird and awkward.
It was weird.
And it felt like clumsy. It felt like maybe the producers edited it on at the end because they're like, your audience is too stupid to remember all this.
This actually, as a side note, the weekly Paramount Plus bitch discussion.
Paramount minus.
There was
a musical sting.
Not only in this episode did it have like the bad transitions, like the sort of jittery transitions with the weird sort of like glitchy faceness. At the top of the screen the whole time, there was a little like distortion line at the top of the screen the entire time.
That's fun.
The lack of respect that they show their supposed flagship franchise is gross.
That's typical for a lot of the Voyager has that bit.
The fact that they were trying to be, obviously they're not home of Star Trek anymore, but the fact that they were like, we're the home of Star Trek. We're not going to put any effort into like any of these reruns we put on here. That is disrespectful and it's gross and it shows a lack of pride in themselves that they're going to declare the flagship streaming service of something and then not put any effort into proper transfers that other streaming services didn't seem to have a problem with.
It's a mess over there that
of course
that's not the one I wanted. I was hoping to have like a real clever drop of some audio because you're going on a crazy awesome rant.
But I think that if they had bothered to put in a little bit more effort into these transfers, maybe it wouldn't have made a difference. But you know,
they could have made a little.
They could
bit
have made a effort, because like there's no way an audience is going to get into a show with shitty transfer with shitty video like that.
Yeah.
So maybe if it was good video, wouldn't have saved it, but it might have saved it. It might have given it a better like fighting chance than gave it with this shit
video without that shit at the top.
It's like interrupting
your shit.
It's like you're asking people to go fucking pirate the shit instead, basically.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
This isn't right either.
It's asking for it.
This is totally wrong. All right.
So anyways, it just like they could have had a better chance if they at least put some effort into it. They didn't put any fucking effort into it. And it's, you know, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I don't run a streaming service, but Jesus Christ, don't say this is your fucking
Jesus.
This is your fucking great show that you're going to support.
Jesus Christ.
And then not even put the bare minimum effort into a transfer.
Not even the bare minimum into it.
All they did is they wanted
put your back into it, Paramount Plus.
All they wanted is All they wanted is to have, like, the library of episodes, but not actually, like, put effort into
it. It's like when that intro shit's all fucked up and janky, and you never get to see it. Like, I got to see it once when it was all clear, like, on my phone. And then even on my phone, it's janky.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's all Androids. You have an iPhone, so it's not just Android. Up. Yeah.
Like, I saw it once, and it was like, look at that. Yeah. It's all clear. Oh, that's
totally,
kind of neat looking.
Totally clear.
Anyways, speaking of Gary Graham, did anybody see the 1989 hit Robot Jocks?
No.
Oh, I always heard about that one. I never watched that.
Okay, I know Gary Graham.
Did you watch that?
Gary Graham is known for Robot Jocks.
I know what it's driving me nuts because
I was afraid to watch it.
Because I know Gary Graham from Enterprise as Saval, so he comes back in a little bit.
Right?
He's Ambassador Saval, and he's great.
Sporocystian.
And I know him as taking over the James Caan role of Matthew Sykes on Alien Nation, the TV show version of Alien Nation.
Yeah, the TV
that's
show.
Funny.
He was the detective guy. And he was in all the TV movies, not the theatrical movies.
They got drunk on spoiled milk.
Yeah.
That was their deal.
Yeah.
As a child,
that's like the Mongols.
That affected my worldview, I think in a positive way.
Sporocystian toxin.
By the way, sporocystian, did you ever think closely? Because what it's combining spore and cyst.
Yeah.
So is it like a cyst-like spore that flies
sporocystian.
Around?
Sporocystian. Highly reactive. Energy burst of...
Dan, you are the living end.
Sporocystian life forms.
The sporocystian
end. Life form. Sporocystian energy.
Sporocystian energy burst of highly reactive. Sporocystian
energy. Holiday madness.
Okay. Sporocystian energy.
You like all my right. Sporocystian soundboard I put together?
No.
Sporocystian
life form. Sporocystian energy. Sporocystian life form. Sporocystian
I vote.
Highly
I vote
reactive.
For yes.
Sporocystian.
Toxin. Okay. Next up, we have Tuvok.
Sporocystian.
So the episode basically starts out with Tuvok and Kes doing their exercises. And of course, I was reminded again that certainly in my view, I suppose this is somewhat subjective, but in my view, Tuvok and Tim Russ's portrayal of Tuvok is like the best, most pure, like Vulcan portrayal.
Yeah.
Because Spock is awesome, of course, but he's got the whole half-human thing, and that deals with that. T'Pol is all about learning how to, like, not be racist against humans, and she also rebels against some of the decisions of the Vulcan High Command, stuff like that. And T'Lyn, of course, has...
Tuvok doesn't mind the smell.
T'Lyn has all her emotional outbursts and her naked lust for water. So Tuvok's character development is never about him being Vulcan. He's never like fighting with his Vulcanness. He's totally happy being a regular old Vulcan, and he acts like a regular old Vulcan. Most of his character development is about not murdering Neelix. That's what he learns over the course of Voyager.
In fact, in this episode, when he's all getting her focusing her mind, and then suddenly it's like,
don't touch the sideburns,
and she's like, oh, it's Neelix, and he rolls his eyes. It's hard to know now. I wasn't sure if he rolled his eyes because it was like, oh, she's not focusing, or if it's just because he doesn't like Neelix. And I think it's just because he doesn't like Neelix.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine you are listening to a symphony and focusing on a single instrument.
Don't touch the sideburns. Yeah.
he hated him from the get-go. Man.
Yeah.
Because well, that fool showed up and wanted a Starfleet uniform. He's like, oh, no.
He saw through all that business.
Oh, no.
He saw through
space
that business.
Space creep.
Super space creep, Neelix.
Space creep.
Tuvok knows a space creep when he sees one.
I will say that the overhearing Neelix, it was cute. I mean, Neelix is cute. He's a creepy dude,
yeah,
but he's funny.
He's cutie pie.
You know,
yeah.
He's got some funny moments there. That's one of them. Now, the senior staff, you know, they were talking about the whole caretaker bit, And it was like some of the most pure exposition ever, because it was all like, oh, if this, then that, and then that, and then the other thing. And it made me think of like in Spaceballs when they do the same thing. They give a bunch of exposition and then Dark Helmet looks at the camera. Rick Moranis, he's like, everybody got that? Good. It's like, then maybe she can find us a way home. The companion.
it's like... Yeah, that's what Voyager is. It's always like, maybe this is the way that we can get home.
Yeah, I want to know. I love so much about Voyager, no, but there are
not this time.
There are things to complain about Voyager.
I want to know how they made that anti-sporocystian gun, like that thing.
That was badass.
That was fucking weird. They look like they just glued together some like big metal parts from an industrial machine,
like a bug zapper or something.
Mm-hmm. It was a funny thing because it sort of. It was partly aggravated me, that device, and partly was cool and sensible.
Tuvok came up.
I just liked the way it looked. It was ridiculous.
Well, yeah, it was like a bug zap, not zapper.
It looked
like
they
chemical...
found some like leftover parts from like the
Dale's
the,
dead bug or
from,
whatever.
From
yeah,
like the,
like
the
you're
the,
spraying for termites.
Or they found they went into the props department and just found some
well,
spare
yeah,
parts
yeah,
and like
that
just
is what they did.
Stick them together in a funny like, way.
This could be a
Tuvok
a menacing device.
Gripping it like, you know, just his hands all spread out, all wild and shit. You know, part of my brain was like, oh, this is sensible that they know they're dealing with a powerful creature based off their experience with the caretaker.
Sporocystian.
So given the option, you know, it makes sense to that for them to develop some sort of defense. On the other hand, it also, I don't know, it was very anticlimactic when they were just like, oh, remember that thing from earlier? We're just going to zap her.
We're going to zap this girl.
And this little girl's just going to fall over.
Oh, no.
I'm just waiting.
Where did she get those shoes?
Because Dan recorded the entire thing.
My cats hated that part.
That was the sound, the
lumpy caretaker corpse.
The resonating remains.
Yeah.
I did find it interesting Tuvok's relationship with Kes versus Tanis's relationship with Kes, because on the one hand, Tanis, like I was saying, was all like, you know, like I said before, he was sort of condescending and trying to like keep her in some sort of what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know.
Subservient.
Yes, subservient. But
Patrick for the win.
Seriously. But Tuvok was actually using similar words. He was telling her things like, your emotional abilities are undisciplined, you know, you're this, you need to develop, you know, basically saying sort of, one could interpret it as sort of similarly, you know, putting her down into
similar,
but the difference is all about motivation, because Tanis's motivation is he was a dick, and like Tuvok's motivation is he's just this sort of emotionless, you know, Vulcan, and so he's not saying these things to try to belittle, or he's not trying.
Patrick in for the win.
Well, I was going to say, he was not trying to leverage any behavior from her that was going to benefit him specifically, as Tanis was. He wasn't trying to leverage. He was just simply trying to help her. So it's interesting that if your motivation is to leverage someone to benefit you, saying shit like that is fucked up. Yeah. But like, if you're Tuvok and you're just trying to like teach them because you're their teacher and you have no emotions and no sort of ulterior motives on them, then you can say similarly kind of condescending things, but that are actually helpful in that instance. So they were both.
He's
kind
a pretty
of,
solid instructor.
So I thought it was interesting the Tanis versus Tuvok sort of instructorship. But the problem is once again, that was just one little bit that I sucked out of that episode, and it didn't really come together.
Yeah,
there was nothing that came together about it. Really,
I like when people use the metaphorical term leverage. Because it makes me think of physically leverage, like using leverage on like one character using leverage or leverage, if you prefer, on a different character.
Leverage.
By maybe having some sort of like triangle shaped thing and a board, and they stick it under the other character. Like
if you,
like Tanis is sticking it under Kes and all like trying to seesaw her up.
Bring the fire.
Give me a lever big enough and I will be able to lift your ass.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. That Dan is paraphrasing a famous quote. Write in and let us know if you know who the author of the that author. Original quote
the
is.
Author.
The purported author. we should say. But yeah, before we go to break, one other thing
it's
I wanted to mention
time for a break.
Was that Kes demonstrated again her poor judgment.
Oh boy, are we
because she's like, she has this quote where talking about Tannis, she's like, but I just have a good feeling about him.
Yeah, right.
I was like, yeah, I'm sure you had a good feeling about Neelix too.
I know. What are you, like, 2 years old?
She has a habit of having good feelings about, you know, creepy dudes.
I was thinking,
because he was obviously creepy. Tannis was obviously, that's the thing. It's another failure of this episode is as soon as he shows up on screen, you're like, fuck that dude. That guy's he's up to some fucked up weird shit.
He's a jerk, dude.
Compared
it's not
to,
a surprise.
Well, if you compare that to These Are the Voyages, which is from Enterprise, which we did last week.
Hey, we discussed that episode last week.
Remember in that episode, they were talking about instincts, and like Riker liked this idea. Like both Deanna Troi and like the Holo Enterprise people were all basically telling Riker to trust his instincts. Mm-hmm. And that was the good thing, which is kind of funny. We followed it up with this episode because, yeah, she's like, my instincts tell me that you're a good person or whatever. She didn't even use the word instincts, but sort of the opposite was true in that case, where in that case,
but
instincts are bad.
Feeling.
I guess that what that tells us is Riker has good instincts and Kes has bad instincts, like you said. So.
Purposefully or otherwise, that's certainly the impression they give off.
Turbulent.
Turbulent indeed. Okay. Speaking of turbulence, how about we take a quick
turbulent
break?
Turbulent juice.
We'll take a quick break, and when we return from that break, we will discuss the name of the caretaker's companion, Suspiria.
Okay, let's do it!
Oh.
We will be right back.
And we're back.
Are we back?
He fucked you
I
up.
Surprised you.
Jesse fucked you up, Patrick.
Hey, no, that's fine. We are officially back.
Mind studies.
Indeed.
The psychokinetic manipulation of matter.
I'm sure. Indeed.
That's what I specialize in.
Indeed, Dan. Indeed.
Mind studies.
Okay. So, Suspiria, the alien, the... they're called the Nacine.
Suspiria!
Yes, Suspiria.
I like this line.
You can play
Suspiria
all of them.
Suspiria will invite you to go with her. To Exotia.
Suspiria will invite you to go
Exotia.
To Exotia.
Exotia.
Suspiria will invite you to go with her.
So the
to
question,
Exotia.
The question
Exotia.
Is
Exotia.
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 Suspiria.
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 All right. Okay. So the question
is, I don't
is,
want to hurt anybody.
Why? Why do we think they selected the name Suspiria for the caretaker's companion?
Because she's suspicious?
Well, that could be it.
Because she likes sarsaparilla?
Okay.
Nobody likes
that's
sarsaparilla.
A bit of a stretch.
Is there some kind of vegetable?
That's a bit of a stretch.
Is there some kind of vegetable called Suspiria or something?
No. Okay. All right. We're gonna get to it, and you can respond.
Dude.
You can respond accordingly. I don't know the actual reason. I
it's
didn't look
up. It's because she's sus.
Now you're offering some potential ideas that maybe were at play in the in Brandon Braga. He wrote this episode.
What your eyes show you is only the surface of reality.
Which is probably not surprising, given it's got a clever sci-fi angle-ish, but poor story construction. So, I looked up Suspiria, and of course, I immediately thought of the film, but even before the film, there is Suspiria de Profundis. Which is Latin for
hell
size,
yeah,
size from the depths, and it's a collection of essays from the English writer Thomas de Quincey, which was published in 1845. And Wikipedia describes it as an examination of the process of memory as influenced by hallucinogenic drug use, and it's been described as one of the best known and most distinctive literary works of its era. So,
what was the year again?
1845.
For which drugs?
Hallucinogenic drugs. So, you know,
shit.
You got your mushrooms, you got your psilocybins,
right,
you got them red caps that do the other, you know, because there's the psilocybin, which are the
like
fun magic mushrooms, and then you got the other magic mushrooms that make you feel like a sinister elf person.
Yeah.
Bring the fire.
You're only supposed to eat those in like New England.
In England?
Yeah, in New England, I think.
Oh, New England.
Yeah, I think in New England, you eat those, and then you feel the sinister, oppressive nature crowding you out.
Cranberries.
Bring the fire.
With
now,
a fire.
Bring the fire.
With a fire.
With the so fire.
It could be that, but I don't see any direct connection to that. I mean, size from the depths, I don't know. It's whatever. Suspiria, of course, my initial thought was the 1977 film by Dario Argento.
With the fire, which is
about
your mind.
It's about an American.
Bring the fire.
Hey.
It's about an American ballet student who transfers to a prestigious dance academy, but realizes, after a series of brutal murders, that the academy is a front for supernatural conspiracy.
Whoa. Dead. Supernatural?
After
conspiracy?
A series of. It's actually a very good movie. People should check
that
out.
That's not possible.
Oh. It's totally possible.
Oh, it is. But, you know, if you dig even deeper, you find out that Suspiria was the name of an English dark wave gothic rock band.
I will kill you.
Dark wave.
That was formed in 1993, so before this episode.
1993.
So that could be the inspiration.
I don't think so.
The lineup consisted of Matthew Carl Lucian and Mark Tansley. They marked a decisive break in the UK goth music scene from the Sisters of Mercy influenced guitar rock that had dominated the scene. So this is a poorly written Wikipedia entry. Drawing on late 1970s techno experimentalists such as Cabaret Voltaire and the Human League, and the early 1980s synthesizer sound of artists such as Depeche Mode and Alphaville.
Sure. The connection has been made.
Yeah, those guys are
awesome. Suspiria fused crisp electronics with heavily affected guitars to produce a much more dance floor oriented sonic backdrop vocal stylings of frontman Lucian.
I think we've established that it has nothing to do with the goth wave band.
Burn down
the not 100% sure. You don't think it has anything to do with a dark wave gothic rock band from England from 1993?
No, I don't.
How about this? Do you think that Brendan Braga...
No.
Brandon Braga picked this just because it sounded cool. Just like the name Cold Fire sounds cool, but has nothing to do with this episode because all the fire that Kes produced was real fucking hot.
Yeah. I know.
There's no cold fire in here. It's not a metaphor for anything.
She set Tuvok's blood to boil.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
There's also an honorable mention. I don't think that this is the influence, but there was also a Norwegian band named Suspiria, but with an E. It was a black thrash metal band formed in 1998. Which is after this episode aired. But it was originally named Seven Sins, but since there was another band with that name, they changed it to the title of the horror film Suspiria, changing the spelling to avoid a clash with Suspiria, a gothic rock band that also took the name. Because they didn't want to offend the gothic rock English band.
With the fire.
They were still
of
around.
Your mind. Bring the fire.
With a fire.
Bring the fire.
With a fire.
With the fire of your mind.
Bring the fire.
With the fire of your mind.
Yeah.
I think Brandon Braga just thought Suspiria sounded cool.
Yeah. That's what, because it's because he wanted to have this sentence.
Suspiria will invite you to go with her to Exosia.
Exosia.
That's the kind of line that, like, people who aren't into sci-fi, when they make fun of, like, sci-fi names and words, they say things like that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm Golbor, going to the land of Zibzob.
I know, right? And, Zibzob.
And, like, look at me, I'm...
Suspiria will invite you to go with her to Exosia.
Suspiria will invite you to go with her to Exosia!
An invitation to Exosia.
Add a touch more lisp to it.
No, I don't want to do that. You do it.
What, the Thuthperia?
Thuthperia!
You know, like the Stanley, like Thuthperia.
I know. I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable.
Well, I think we all know whose side we're on.
Too late.
No, we are on no one's side because no one is on our side.
But I don't want to hurt anybody.
That's not even true, dude.
Sporocysteine. Sporocysteine.
Yeah, so there was weird shit where she made all her plants catch on fire.
Yeah.
And then there was that CGI fire. And then she, like, it goes away and she's on the ground like,
And that was just, that was a memorable scene, the circle of fire.
Yeah, it
was
weird.
Cool.
There was almost something orgasmic about that scene. It was very, because the fire.
That's interesting you should say that.
Because the fire wasn't all like, obviously it was destructive, but it didn't have a destructive sound or appearance.
It was
even.
A cold fire.
It was,
wasn't. It burned out the plants.
The appearance of the fire was just kind of this magical CGI fire. It wasn't sounding like some heavy duty burning. It was all very soothing. The whole thing was soothing. And even the music they played wasn't sinister music. It was just kind of like, and then she's on the ground, all laying on the ground, like, So it was like something very pleasant and orgasmic about it. And she was kind of like, bummed out that she killed her plants, but she was also excited that she killed her plants.
Which she refers to later, which is one of those hints of something interesting that they basically abandoned.
and then they told us that, like, the way they showed us that she could, like, see the magical plant life magic was they just saturated all the plant colors. Yeah. And so they were like super bright.
Like, it looked like Willy Wonka.
Yeah. And then I like the CGI of like when she's looking at the water molecules and it's like, they're not moving. And it's like, they're cold. And then they move. And then
I enjoyed that.
Then
they're
catching on fire looking all weird.
Then they
weird.
Got super hot and it was like green. When she started boiling,
it was
up
like
too
a plasma.
Long, it got like green.
And
plasma.
Then, yeah, and
oh,
then
had green blood.
And then for about 10
that's right.
And for about 10 seconds, this episode turned into like a horror movie. Like,
oh. I know, okay. And she was like screaming all ridiculously. Okay.
Oops, that's not what I meant. Right.
Progressively.
Do you, do you have the Kes scream? Jesus!
I know, like completely ridiculous.
This is horrifying. It's really horrifying.
Like, you can't. You,
I cut
you,
that together.
You wouldn't do that now.
Here, let's play it again.
It's out of style to scream in that particular. There's a. I don't know. You guys know better about the musical term for that sort of discordant screeching that's underneath. It's not a normal scream.
Oh, like
it's a real primal.
There's harmonics.
There's some like weird harmonics that like that are horrifying. There's like an extra horrifyingness.
Let's just be silent for a second.
Harmonics,
listen,
Diablos.
Let's be silent for a second, please, and let's listen to this thing in whole. In full
content warning,
and so
more of this horrifying scream.
Yeah, and don't listen for stuff that sounds like extra human, like otherworldly. That doesn't quite sound like it was Kes.
Beyond human.
Yeah, it was beyond human. Beyond they added a sound to this. Hold on, here we go.
Like a pig squealing.
Yeah,
it was horrifying.
Nah,
yeah,
I don't think they added anything.
I think they added
squealing.
Something.
I don't think they did. I think that was just Jennifer Leanne's like horrifying scream. She's just really, really good at that. I'll note to the audience that Dan has no problem playing this over and over again, but he wouldn't play somebody making like a throw up sound.
Oh, that's disgusting.
But I don't want to hurt anybody.
You don't mind existential pain. Yeah, no, the horror movie aspect was good.
I thought it was silly and aggressive.
So, like... Yeah, all right. So
sounds stimulating.
Let me clarify.
Turbulent.
Again, a lot of parts of this episode are super interesting and intriguing. But
it sounds like a pig squealing.
But they don't connect.
It sounds like a pig squealing.
Okay, but they don't connect together.
You sound like a pig.
You sound like a fart going inside a brain.
Okay, this is an ongoing argument from before we started recording the podcast. I still don't understand how a fart goes inside a brain, but
I'm going to punch your fart box if you don't shut up.
Fart box.
Dude, you're ruining Jesse over here.
Ruining Jesse.
Look at this. You're getting him all discombobulated. So
discom Jesseulated.
So this whole scene where she, first of all, she boils Tuvok's blood, and
oh no,
and it's horrifying. The makeup, the way Tim Russ plays it,
he's all bubbling out.
Before it happens, when she's heating up and he goes,
fascinating.
You can tell there's some kind of a little bit of urgency
to
when he says fascinating, he's like, I don't know about this, you know, and he was right.
It is horrifying. It just doesn't connect to the rest of the story because it comes out of nowhere and
the connection has been made.
Super scary. So in that sense, it's impactful. I give them credit for an impactful scene that affected me emotionally.
But it was so jarring.
But a couple problems with it is, first of all,
tonally inconsistent.
It was tonally inconsistent. Good evening, everybody. My name is Tonally Inconsistent.
It was timbrally.
I'm here to serve you and the tone of the episode.
Why?
No, don't worry about it, Dan. It's all good.
Why?
I said don't worry about it.
I will kill you.
Okay. So I get aggravated when I see bits and pieces of good stuff, but then I can't connect it emotionally because they haven't
You O'Campin, see it.
You got me. You're a
that
pun
guy
detective.
Got you, dude.
This guy's a pun detective over here.
Pun detective.
And part of why this scene is undermined is because it goes to commercial and comes back and Tuvok's fine.
Yeah, right.
Like, fine.
Just totally fine.
He's like, he acts like he's a little sore.
Yeah.
And the doctor's all annoyed.
And the doctor's like, okay, you can get light duty until 3 days from now. And Tuvok's all like, nah, fuck
like,
that.
No. It's like, oh, you guys.
So I think he, you know, he looked, he was trying to be, and he was trying to be all like, you know, objective and you know, not emotional about it. And he was like, you're probably feeling pretty guilty. You're probably feeling, you know,
boiling my blood from the inside.
That was his kind of his way of saying, fuck you, man. Like, he seemed a little annoyed.
He was like, bless your heart.
Yeah. He seemed slightly annoyed because like she was apologizing. He was basically like, you can stuff your sorries in a sack. Get your shit together. And like, let's try this again.
Stuff your sorries in a sack.
Yeah. He was a little pissed by it.
Hey, we should sell It's Got Star Trek branded sorry sacks. Do you think there would be
that's
a market
from Seinfeld
for like IGST sorry sacks of various different sizes?
You got a sorry sack in your pants.
It could be a great it could be a great Christmas present.
My sack is solid, dude. Yeah. He's not sorry.
You got a solid solid sack in your pants?
You could have like a 1 gallon sorry sack, a 2 gallon sorry sack. I don't know, maybe a 3 gallon sorry sack.
To carry
like
all your
large.
Your sorries?
You can stuff. You can give it to somebody and say they can stuff all their sorries in it.
Full of ropes.
Sorries? Like the...
I don't know what Jesse's talking about, ropes.
Like, you're talking about like like the sorries that you wear. The sorries.
No, I'm not talking about a sorry. I'm talking about the sorry.
The sorry?
Not, yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Canada. Sorry. Hey, little sorry. Hey, pardon me, sorry. Get the podcast
process.
Back on track. Sorry. Where were we? Oh, yes. The show, this episode. Cold Fire. But yeah, jumping into the horror and then back out of the horror was jarring. Mm-hmm. And that was the most egregious example of it, I think, with the Tuvok thing, because it came on quick and then immediately was resolved. But there were a couple others in the episode where it's like,
that's
okay,
now there was all these sort of like non-connected sort of like individual kinds of scenes that didn't
like
connect
with the floating bodies and the blood dripping onto Janeway's jacket.
Yeah, there was blood on the jacket.
That was trying to be a typical horror trope and a Star Trek 2 trope.
And then
by
for
the
some
way.
Reason, Suspiria was some kind of like slug, like worm slug, like tentacle worm slug thing. Was the caregiver like one of those
caretaker?
The caretaker was that a worm slug?
I can't remember if we always ever saw him as a worm before, because he died and turned into that lumpy rock thing.
And then
before that he was the banjo playing old man.
And like I said though earlier in the episode about how Thanos was condescending to Kes, that part never really went anywhere. Like he was just telling her, it's like, oh, it's cute, you're so naive. But then that never like culminated to anything. It's like a bunch of these individual scenes that look like individually they could have been like stretched out into like something worthwhile. But it was just like, oh, this is a cool idea. Oh, that's a cool idea. Oh, let's do that. These are all like neat things they do in shows. Let's just shove them all together in an episode.
Like one of the things that was sort of implied by the episode was the classic folk rules around using magic that involve living things, at least in the Western tradition, but I think in some other traditions this holds true as well. Just it depends on the tradition. But that there is a sort of a balance, and that if you perform some sort of magic, it's going to have some sort of negative effect. You know, there's like a certain amount of poofy power that gets used in the universe.
Poofy power.
Whatever the correct term
poofy
is.
Poofy power.
And so you're watching this fella come in here, and he's all like, hey, I'm waving my magic hand and using my mind, and like the flowers are looking great. Mm. And you're like, hey, if the flowers are looking great, that means something's been used up according to Western folklore.
Right.
You made me think of that, Dan, where you're talking about how like it's like, oh yeah, let's just sort of plop in different units of story fun, plop this in.
And somehow it resulted in a story, but a story where none of the individual parts went anywhere, yet it's still kind of, you saw that something was happening, but you don't know what got accomplished by the end. You don't even really know how you got to where you were. It's like, what was the resolution? The resolution was that...
I know, it's hard to remember sometimes.
Yeah, the resolution was Suspiria appeared... And they used their gun to zap Suspiria, and they were like, we're not, and then Janeway was like, we're not bad, we're good. And then Suspiria,
we're gonna let you go.
We're gonna let you go. And Suspiria was like, oh, you are good? You did let me go. That must mean you are good.
But I'm not gonna help you.
I'm not gonna help you. Right. I'm gonna disappear. And then
the one guy is all like, Suspiria!
He just disappears away. And like, we don't, and like, the Voyager still has this, we can only assume it. You could say that they're not space bullies anymore because Suspiria forgave them, but at the same time,
they were never space bullies.
They just kind of disappeared. Like, we can't really assume that the rest of the quadrant knows that. Honestly, I think they're still known as space bullies.
Well, and by the way, that's another another one of the actually interesting components. And they touched on this a couple other times in Voyager.
I say they're still space bullies
because from the perspective of other people, there's this ship full of strange ass aliens marauding left and right, interacting with all these things, destroying societies and stuff like that.
All those gross faced Delta Quadrant aliens.
Yeah, that's right, with their funny hair, the Kazon with their silly hair. I like that's a really interesting idea, but it's barely touched on. It's sort of referenced in this episode. So, another disjointed component.
Yeah, we never see any evidence that they've been redeemed by to the rest of the quadrant.
Well, there's the other aspect is, remember I mentioned earlier about how the presumably because of budget they didn't actually show any of these other Okampans. Mm-hmm. Because of that, again, it shows you the example. It's
These people.
Well, exactly. You forget them, and as a result of forgetting them because you're not looking at them, the story inadvertently can lead you down incorrect predictive paths. Mm-hmm. Like you were describing an incorrect predictive path where you thought it was going to be a bigger decision that Kes has to make.
I can't force myself to love you even though it would let my friends go home.
And I was sent down the wrong predictive path because since we keep only seeing Tanis and only hearing reference to these other Okampans, mm-hmm. to the end of the episode and even to now, I'm like, was he the only one?
Right, was he lying?
And does he like live with the lady?
Right.
There was that one other guy that met with them.
What other guy?
There was another guy that came aboard Voyager.
Was there another guy? I don't remember seeing another guy.
Yeah, there was another guy that was like, he was like even more hostile.
I don't remember. I don't know what you're talking about, man. I don't remember that guy. Was there another guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a second guy, Dan?
There was another guy, yeah.
I don't remember.
Hey.
Okay. I believe Jesse, but I just don't remember.
See, I don't believe Jesse. I think Jesse has a bad case of holiday madness.
But you're
the one that made up holiday.
Well, regardless, I'm not remembering the other guy. I'm just watching this and I'm like, is the fulcrum of the story that this guy is lying about his situation?
Probably.
And that he's actually like a lone Okampa and he's trying to escape from the caretaker lady.
Yeah, Kes, the way Kes defeated him was not precipitated by anything that happened earlier in the episode other than like her powers started to become focused, but we don't know why her powers suddenly were good enough that she could knock him away. What, because her love of Neelix? But then that comes out into a whole, there was nothing real, there was no good reason she was suddenly able to defeat Tanis. There was no good reason for that to happen.
Unless it's he gave her the power and assumed through his arrogance that she would never use it against him.
Yeah, but they did
fine.
This, but like we already knew that Kes loved Neelix. There was never a question in the episode of how much Kes loved Neelix.
So if you treat Neelix poorly by doing the zoom in face power, Neelix gets pulled backwards on a rope.
Right. That was kind of fun to watch. But like, I mean, there was nothing. It's like, of course, if Neelix gets fucked up, Kes is going to do like all of her power to like make that stop happening. That was never a question in the episode. Yeah. Right. It was never a question. And like, if anything, and like, even if she has power, like Tanis has like what, a whole 10 years experience on her in terms of
powers.
Yeah,
he's still full of shit.
He's 14. She's 2. So we can presume that his powers are stronger. If she has stronger powers than him, we need to know why her powers are stronger than his. Is she like the chosen one? No, does she just love Neelix that much? Like there was just never any question. Why was she able to do that?
Yeah, they never knew what they wanted to do with the Okampa. I'm sure they had some grand ideas when they're like, hey, the chick is 2 years old. She's
you can do more.
Dating a creepy space guy.
Space creep.
And then we'll do all sorts of crazy moral adventures around that. And it's like, no, when it came down to it, they had trouble figuring out what to do with Kes. And it's a shame because Kes is an interesting character in a lot of ways.
And then they replaced her with Seven of Nine.
Yes, of course. Eventually it replaced with Seven of Nine and led to much more interesting stories, frankly. I think.
Absolutely.
No offense. I think it's just a failure of the writers in setting up. I think if you're working on a creative endeavor, it does demonstrate the importance of carefully thinking out your sort of foundational character description and try to think things through a little bit. I'm not suggesting they didn't do this. I'm not trying to lord over actual professional writers. But in the production of a TV show, you can see how sometimes people go down a weird path or write themselves into a corner. And I think they did have a little bit of trouble with Kes and
not enough time.
Yeah, because they did not have enough time, but they tried. You know, this is a story. They attempted to make a story that focused on Kes. Unfortunately, Other than her fighting back against Tannis, there's not much agency on her part.
No, it doesn't there's
seem
none.
Like. It seems like she's and just being led around, like then, you described.
And
Dan.
Like I said, even her fight, and like I just said, even her fight, like defeating Tannis, there almost wasn't any agency on her in that part either, other than the fact that she was able to do it. But
it was like plot agency. She had to do it.
Right. But we don't, there's nothing that she did that in the episode that would like tell us that she had agency over that action.
Still bits and bobs that are not so bad or that are interesting, but they make it almost more frustrating when you see that. You're like, oh, that's really cool. And then zoop, they take it away.
Zoop, there it is. Zoop, there it isn't.
Well, so like they're having that dinner and the dinner looks all interesting.
Oh, okay. So there's a dinner. They had a square plate of greens and then they had another smaller square plate that looked like it was turned 45 degrees and placed on top of the bigger square plate that also had greens on it. If you look closely, it was two plates on top of each other.
I did not look that closely. Was there food in both plates?
Yes. So there was a larger square plate with greens and then there was a smaller square plate turned 45 degrees on top of the larger square plate. So the points were going to the points of the smaller.
Oh, no, I get what you're saying. Did it look like it was squishing it or would it? Like not touch.
The points of the smaller plate were on the edges of the bigger plate. Yeah. There was greens around the bottom, and then there was greens on top of the smaller plate.
My question for you, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Evidence!
My question for you is, do you think that the greens on the bottom plate
were squished?
Would they leave a residue on the bottom of the top plate?
I think
or
they
was
would.
The top plate clean enough? Was it set in such a way that it was just sort of out of convenience? Would you have been concerned to take the top plate and put it down on the table?
Yeah, I would have been concerned to take the top plate off.
Because you thought it might leave some residue.
Gooper doopers. Some gooper doopers.
Well, I'm glad we were able to clarify that. At that dinner, when Tannis is talking about the technology that extended the Compan lifespan up to 20 years.
Yeah.
Neelix is all like asking about whether that would work on Kes or not. And I was thinking about it. I was like, I couldn't tell if he was like excited because Kes could live longer or if he was like, oh shit, my escape hatch with this gal just got extended by a decade. Because if you, and I know this was not intended and I really don't mean this as an insult, but it's sometimes hard not to think of Neelix as like, I'm going to date an Okampan chick because, worst case scenario, I dated for like 10 years. And I know that's not what they're going for. It's kind of hard sometimes not to think about it when you're thinking about, Neelix's pirate style proclivities.
Totally.
Excuse me.
Sounds like he burps.
May I say something now?
You may not.
May I see something?
Xosha. Not with your eyes, with your mind. They touch the flower. The nerve impulses travel up their arm to the brain. Yeah. Once you see beyond the physical, you see the universe as it truly is. With the fire of your mind.
He had a lot of these kinds of like, not quite platitudes, but I don't know what you'd call them, but there's these kinds of like.
Platypuses,
platypi statements.
Yeah, platypi. I wanted
And Tuvok also, Tuvok also has this one.
Without the darkness, how would we recognize the light?
There's a lot of these kinds of like, that's a platitude.
Yeah. I mean, I like that.
I like that too, but it's like, it's a pretty common one. How do you know good if there's no bad?
It's a little bit of cliche.
Platitudinal.
It also makes me think of that horrifying Deep Space Nine episode, The Darkness and the Light.
I never realized I had such dark impulses.
This scene, not the scene you just played, the previous scene.
Once you see beyond the physical, you see the universe as it truly is.
Yes. So another critique I had of this episode is you played some of the Tuvok stuff. The Tuvok stuff, cliched or not, it makes sense. It's like, okay,
it's
cool.
It's a defensible philosophical
position.
I just think there was a lot of these kinds of quotes. There was a lot of these kinds of quotes in the episode that was like over and over and over again. It's like, so it's just kind of, it kind of built up. It's like snowballed for me.
I'm going to get to my point eventually.
But I don't want to hurt anybody.
And my point is,
Chief O'Brien.
My point is that I think while Tuvok's philosophical points were defensible, Tannis's quote where he says, "Hurt people, help them. It's all the same."
Oh yeah, right.
It's like you have no, you don't provide a justification for that. It's an interesting philosophical debate, except he just is declaring it. It's just like he's just like, I'm just declaring it. I'm not making a comment that evokes any sort of intellectual thought. I'm just declaring a nonsensical statement.
Yeah.
Like, help them, hurt them. It's all the same.
He says, help them, hurt them, help people, hurt them, give life, kill. It's all the same. Yeah. He's talking about life and death as simple transfers of energy, but he doesn't really mention if he can bring dead things back to life, which is why, like you said, it's just like, what do you mean it's all the same? Like, what? Can you follow up on that statement, please?
And you could see that being the beginning of some sort of clever, sinister discussion, which is also gaslighty and all that. I would have liked to see that. Not just an unsupported justification of a nonsensical position.
Like, I think he was trying to say stuff like everything is just energy morphing into each other, but like, yeah, once you kill something, is it that easy to bring? Can you bring, if you can take a dead thing and bring it back to life and you can show us that, then like, yeah. Okay, maybe I'll start to believe this. Kill them, but that's help not even, them, bring that's them
not even, he doesn't
then
mean
I can
that,
start
though.
To believe that, like, okay, it's all the same. But like, yeah, no, he's not saying that.
Yeah, he's not saying that at all. He's just like, yeah, fuck him.
Yeah, right.
And the thing is I think that there's a sort of a philosophical incompatibility with the idea of being like, oh, it's all meaningless because maybe that's not exactly what he's saying, but he's saying it's all the same. He doesn't describe a value system that justifies his continued interest in existing. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, oh, this is meaningless, it doesn't mean anything, it's like, okay, then you can now become inert. That's the only rational decision to make. But you seem intent on getting Kes to join you and to continue your culture and all that other stuff. So obviously you care about some people dying or living. It was underexplored or left unexplored, which is a shame.
Is that like when you're unemployed or underemployed?
I mean, you did state two different words.
That was the thing related to each other. I think isn't that Sally Struthers? Didn't she say if you're unemployed or underemployed? It was for DeVry Institute or something. Was that for DeVry or was it something else?
No, it was something different.
It was something
just
like,
for our largely international audience. Dan is describing a local television commercial for.
Well, it's not that local.
Well, I think it was only in a few states. DeVry.
Well, there was it had Sally Struthers in it.
Yeah,
so
a lot of the people listening do not know who Sally Struthers is.
If you're like, I'm saying it's at least it was at minimum national. That's what I'm saying. It's national.
I don't think it was national
because Sally Struthers is a national.
I think it was like in Delaware, in like Virginia, maybe. Texas.
I think Sally Struthers was a big enough star that she would be national in all circumstances.
I'm not saying Sally Struthers is not national. I'm saying that the advertisements for the DeVry technical schools.
Sally Struthers wouldn't.
I don't think they had DeVry in every state.
No, Sally Struthers wouldn't be involved in a project that was under national.
That almost sounded like you were doing
Sally Struthers
like
a
tongue twister.
Sally Struthers. Sally Struthers would not be involved in a project that is less than national.
What are you talking about, man? The money is good. If you get the money,
she was a major star.
Do you work for Sally Struthers, dude?
Do you think Brad Pitt would be in a local TV commercial?
Brad Pitt does like those like Japanese whiskey commercials and stuff.
That's different. That's Japan. That's Japan. That's totally different.
All right.
Japan is a big market.
You're throwing us off. Off.
I'm not the one throwing. No, I'm not throwing it off. You guys are the one that sidetracked to basics. I said something small.
Sidetracked to basics.
All I said was unemployed or underemployed, and you guys were like, for our foreign market out there, for the people not from the United States, what you have to understand is Sally Struthers did a commercial for something that was local and it wasn't even national, so you won't understand what Dan is talking about right now. Even though what Dan said only took about 5 seconds, what I'm saying takes about 3 minutes. Dan, why did you sidetrack us like that? I think you should leave.
With Tim Robinson.
Didn't I sound like Tim Robinson?
Yeah.
You go, go.
We have to take a bit of a break and clear out some of this holiday madness. And when we return, we will conclude.
We're not finished.
we will conclude our discussion of Star Trek Voyager's Cold Fire.
Oh, man.
From the second season. It is the 10th episode. Okay.
That's not possible.
Be right back.
But we're back.
Okay, all right, we're back. Okay. Oh, my face is hurting. My face is sore.
Do we know why Tanis wanted Kes anyways? Was he just collecting Okampans?
Yeah.
His initial thing was I just protecting their space station. They introduce an Okampan and then he's like, okay, why don't you come over here?
And then he wants, I guess he's just collecting Okampans. A Compton collector.
Okay.
Yeah.
I agree. I guess that's just what he's doing.
Hexiprismatic.
Oh, yeah. There were odd plasmatic readings.
Plasmatic. I love when they say plasmatic.
And then, do you have both times plasmatic was mentioned?
I didn't.
Because Janeway says plasmatic. There is an odd. No.
It's funny you asked a question. And I keep trying to answer it. I don't have any of the plasmatics. Oh, there should be.
The plasmatic sounds like a 1950s doo-wop band.
Yeah, I know.
I think there is a band called the plasmatics.
Sporocystian.
There should be a band called the Sporocystian.
Sporocystian.
Sporo generator.
Topologram.
Topologram.
Okay.
Milana's
so
on it.
Another example, like I mentioned earlier in the
Chief
podcast.
O'Brien.
Yeah, you see Tannis and you're immediately like, watch out for that guy. That guy's a creepy dude. And then it's the same thing with the creepy little blonde girl, where Janeway's all like, hello.
Hello.
We've been waiting to talk to you for a while.
Suspiria.
And just like, there's a creepy blonde girl in your engineering department. She's looking Alice from Alice in Wonderland or something.
Why?
And she's crying, holding the corpse of her, I don't know if it's her lover or a commander. Now, I will say,
yes, I know.
Again, it's the 90s, I know the deal. The 90s kind of sucked in a lot of ways.
Why?
One of the ways it sucked is that they, and I was doing this earlier, they gendered the caretaker and his companion as male and female.
Yes,
even though they're just like lumpy space worms, they still kind of set it up like that. And
why?
That's not a great thing, but I guess, you know, art product of its time.
I will kill you.
What are you gonna do?
Do you know who did the voice of the creepy version? The creepier version?
The elder Suspiria?
Of Suspiria?
I feel like I recognize her voice somehow.
You do. You do recognize her voice.
Maybe if I look on the internet if I vamp, you'll give me enough time to find it.
Yeah, but I know who it is, so you don't need to look it
up. But then I can guess make it seem smart.
It's not guessing look it up.
But I can guess and seem smart if I vamp long enough.
No.
And then I'll say it, and you'll be like, you're right, Dan, and Dan's so super smart.
Our audience skews on the highly intelligent side, so they're not going to be fooled by your ruse, Dan.
Okay, now that's pandering, what you just did right there. That was major pandering.
And you're not supposed to point that out. How are we supposed to grow our listenership?
See. Isn't that like a classic technique? Is like you say like to the people hanging out with you, it's like, we're so smart, aren't we, guys?
Yeah.
To try to make them like believe you more. That's how you deceive people, by telling them they're really smart.
You're only deceiving them if you don't believe it.
If I go up to a person and I want to deceive them of something, I can say like, you know, smart people like you and me, we know what's up.
But you're assuming deceit on my part. There is no deceit.
We know that
on
if you
part.
If you shove your head up my ass and you taste my shit, it'll be good for your skin. You're a smart guy. You know this.
I'll note that our listeners also, according to surveys, trend on the classier side of things, too. They have a classy, highbrow audience is the type of people who enjoy this form of Star Trek banter.
Majel Barrett.
Yes. Good guess, Dan. Good fucking guess.
Also, Lindsay Ridgway.
She was the actress who played Suspiria.
Wait, this is Majel Barrett.
I will kill you.
Yes.
Yep.
And she put on a creepy voice.
She wore it like a suit. Mm-hmm. And then this is our what was the name of the other one? Something Ridgway?
What are you talking about?
Lindsay Ridgway.
Oh.
Yes, I know.
That was Lindsay Ridgway. And this is
I will kill
Majel
you.
Barrett. And this
why?
Is, that was Lindsay Ridgway. Now we're getting into the stretch like taffy part of the episode. Because this is when
Dan, just play some more crazy music.
Where does Suspiria live? Now you kill me as you did my mate. Now you will know what frail, small creatures you truly are.
The whole going to her little subspace land thing, and then the guy asking to go with her. Again, it was a little confusing because did he ever live on the space station? Presumably yes, I guess. Jesse's saying that there was even some other guy that we saw that I don't remember seeing.
What?
You don't remember you said that he beamed over with some other guy?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was another guy.
A place the humanoids on this ship call a subspace lair, a place of pure thought, pure energy. A place of the mind.
And we don't know enough, because they didn't provide the information, we don't know enough to know, has Tannis been to this place before? Is this a place that has been described to him by Suspiria, and he's longed to go there as some form of heaven? Is it the type of place, like the Undying Lands in Lord of the Rings, where mortals can't really go and spend much time because it's too much for them?
Is it like looking at the Ark of the Covenant? Are you hearing the word of God, and as the stories tell you, and your face explodes because you can't hear, because God's voice is like too powerful or whatever?
Did you think of that because of the association with the name Tannis and the Indiana Jones trilogy? Or at least, you know,
when I kept hearing Tannis, I kept associating with this Dragonlance book that had like one of the characters. I think he was like a half elf named Tannis. Mm. I think he was.
Was he half elf and half human, or half elf and half what?
He was half elf and half your butt.
I only bring it up because often when you're dealing with people who identify as multiracial, and people refer to being half something, the other half is often assumed to be white. And in fantasy and sci-fi, the other half is often assumed to be human.
Yeah.
And which is an interesting observation.
It's true. Because if it wasn't...
Like Spock is always, I'm a half Vulcan.
Well, it's because,
presumably on Vulcan, he's like, I'm half human.
Well, fantasy stuff is very human-centric because, like, the human characters in Dungeons and Dragons are always, like, the most average one.
Yeah.
And now if you think about it, it's just because it's from the human perspective. By average, it just means they have the same abilities we do, and the other races have different abilities from us in this way. So it's very human-centric. And so, yes, when you say half-elf, it is assumed half-human, which is interesting. They should stop making that assumption.
I think we should remind ourselves to avoid that, because even though it makes sense, like you said, it's the same thing with Star Trek. All the aliens that have that Star Trek has developed over the course of the franchise, they're tools to tell stories about the human condition. But as the universe grows, some of the stories of the human condition involve how we set defaults for things, right. And I like Star Trek has touched on that a couple times. Deep Space Nine was good at that with Quark and Odo in particular,
kind of
calling that out a bunch. But yes, I digress. We already talked about how this was the ultimate
Grand Magus.
The ultimate in reset button episodes, which was common on Voyager. And again, I do want to stress and reiterate, I love Voyager. There's tons of Voyager that's awesome. And I get sad when I feel like I was wasting my time watching an episode.
The thing about Voyager is I've tried to watch it from beginning, like starting from the first episode in order. And I have trouble doing that because there are a lot of episodes that are just not too exciting.
They're mediocre.
But there are some really good episodes. It's just there's a lot of these like completely out of nowhere mediocre episodes.
Voyager is I think
with TNG
it's inconsistent.
With TNG, even the bad episodes are kind of interesting usually in some way. Even if it's just kind of like, oh, that was terrible. It's still like, I mean, kind of interesting. I mean, some Voyager episodes are just kind of boring.
Well, Voyager came at a period in the history of Star Trek where it had been on nonstop since 1987, had gone back to a ship-based format, and even though they had their own somewhat unique setup that we saw a refresher of here with the caretaker and getting flung out to the Delta Quadrant and all that stuff. Fundamentally, it was still a spaceship flying around. And I think that sometimes they were really able to innovate and come up with some pretty cool stories, like Year of Hell, for example, is a classic. Number of others, Blink of an Eye. I think other times they were spinning their wheels a little bit. And this one felt like they were spinning their wheels. It was like the writers were like, you know what, let's do a Kes episode. And they're like, okay. And then when they got down to it, they're like, ah, shit. What did we even say about these Ocampans and what's the deal? And let's come up with something. And it just feels like a lot of disconnected things that got thrown onto a piece of paper or typewriter or whatever they were using in 1995 when they aired. But it's all again about that reset button, which is part of. It's a flaw, I think, in Voyager when how often they use that reset button and in a non interesting way, for lack of a better term. Year of Hell, which I just mentioned. It's a reset button, but that's a brilliant story. That's a story worth telling. You enjoy the tale. Things happen that are impactful and interesting. This one, it's almost like insulting you to be like, oh, well, you know, my powers are gone, and I guess I learned to not trust obviously creepy dudes.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting the way Tannis was teaching her to use her movement powers. Like, he was telling her, don't think about the action, think about the result. I thought that was at least an attempt to be creative.
Yes, another
like seeing being like, don't think
thing.
About moving it, just think about drinking it, and the rest will come as it happens. And I, it's kind of because
and
it's always
and this is pre-Matrix, by the way, because it's some of the same philosophy, right? But before that,
well, it, and it's interesting when, like, for example, in Star Wars, like with the pre-sequels when they're trying to the prequels. Sorry, no, there's a Borderlands game called the pre-sequel, and it's a joke, and
I feel
it's really
you.
Funny.
I feel you.
So in the prequels, like this idea of trying to explain to somebody how to use mind powers is inherently difficult because how do you explain that in such a way that's not completely boring and just like, just do it and make it happen? It's like,
how do you explain to people how to make that tingling in your spine that goes up the back of your neck? Do you know how to do that? Or can you do that thing where you wiggle your eyes, like wiggle your eyeballs all super fast? I don't know how to describe how to use the muscles to do that.
Right.
But so I guess I can wiggle my eyeballs all fast, but I don't know how to tell somebody how to wiggle their eyeballs.
I guess my focus was more like it's boring to watch people try to explain how to do something that you don't know how to do, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's interesting when they put like some kind of creative effort into saying like, oh, that's that you've been, I don't know, this was cool that Tannis did that. I don't know what you're talking about with the tingle up the spine. No fucking idea.
You can't like sort of generate like electrical impulses that make your spine tingle.
I think that means you have like some kind of like pinched nerve or something.
What about the eye wigglies? You can't do the eye wigglies? Not everybody can do the eye wigglies, I don't think. But it also could be that it's not.
Can you roll your tongue?
It's not. Like a.
No, that's not rolling your tongue. That's rolling your R's.
Oh, rolling my R's.
That's rolling your tongue.
I can't roll my tongue.
No, roll your tongue. Make it when you make your tongue a taco. See, I don't have the genetic tools to do that. You knew what I was talking about, but you tried to make it something else because you didn't want to begin with, I can't do this. You wanted to begin with, but I can do that.
I'm doing it.
I said, Patrick, can you roll your tongue? And you were like, you mean like this? And you went, because you knew what I was talking about. You knew I was talking about the other thing, and you were embarrassed.
You were embarrassed
to say I couldn't do it. So
he's
you thought
like
you
admonishing
would
admonishing me you with thought, his finger. He's
you,
waving his
you
finger.
You thought you would minimize that deficiency by first starting off with what you can do.
Dude, you're talking a bunch of you've been watching too much Voyager. You're talking all this techno babble.
No, it's not techno babble.
Minimalizing my efficiencies.
No, you didn't want to.
Oh, deficiencies.
You didn't want to begin with the deficit. You wanted to begin with the positives and to impress us with your rolling R abilities. But you knew when I said roll your tongue, you knew what I meant. You just didn't want to begin with the negative. Marginalize. You didn't want to marginalize your abilities.
I like 1-inch margins, generally speaking. 1-inch margins all the way around. 12
Patrick, it's not a deficiency to not be able to roll your tongue. It's just how we're born.
You mean like
because I can do that.
This is stupid.
I think literally everyone can roll their R's because like they have whole whole languages like Spanish.
Yeah, but if you're not taught how to do it.
Yeah, if you're not taught how to do it. If you're not taught how to do it.
If you gotta have some instruction in how to
great
do it.
Great ass.
All right, Star Trek Voyager.
Well. They're dead. When he died, dead.
Does that conclude?
Dead. They're dead. They're dead. Dead.
I will kill you.
But.
Your giggles.
Just have a good feeling.
Holiday madness.
But I.
Which holiday?
Thanksgivings.
But
Dan is wincing while using
this
touchscreen.
Because the opening silence is of different lengths for these two sounds, so it's like I have to time them differently.
Oh.
Because you know, there's always like a split second of like silence before the actual sound, and it's not quite even on these two, so it's making it. I need to trim them up closer to the front of the sound. Sometimes I like to leave a little tiny bit of silence just to make it blend better, and because sometimes there's sounds that you don't know you can hear, but you can hear that affect how the rest of the sound sounds. You know,
give us an
about?
Example.
Like when people say something and they give like a little sigh beforehand, or they breathe in real quick, but like you don't even know you hear it, but it affects.
You mean
the,
a Suspiria, a sigh from the depths?
So it affects
Suspiria, frenulum. What was that called? Suspiria,
frenulum.
No.
Or if you
Suspiria divinorum.
If you cut
profundus, Suspiria de
profundus maximi.
Hey, you asked me to explain one. I'm explaining to you.
I'm enjoying the explanation,
please.
But I'm not able to because there's a lot of chaos going on right now.
It's holiday madness is the clinical term.
At the end of a sound, You dip song. Sometimes after a sound, there's like little breathes or noises that sort of help extend the word out. And if you cut it too close,
trust me, I know. I edit this podcast. I know all about those sounds.
Right. Well let me finish, please. When you cut things to what you think is the end of the sound, there's those extra sort of hard, esoteric sort of noises that go play into this. Can you shut up for one second?
I'm sorry. I was just sort of humming in assent.
It sounds like you're making fun.
No, I'm not. I sincerely was not intending to make sense. I understand what you mean. Mm-hmm,
okay. Okay. I'm going to explain something at a normal speed, and
then
we're going to
click the button,
and we're going to see if we can like pay attention to what I say.
Got it.
Not having to rush through this.
All right.
When you play a sound, there's what you can hear, and then there are like sort of the sounds that you don't realize that you hear following that sound. There are sort of the ambient sounds surrounding it. And then if you cut at the very end of
ambient.
What you... Ambient. Jesse, can you please? Can you please? So after, when you cut a sound at the end of where you think the sound is over, there's these extra sort of sounds that you don't know that you hear that like sort of contribute to that sound. And so you're actually doing a disservice to the main sound when you cut off too closely to the end to where you think the sound actually ends. Sometimes you want like a quarter second of ambient ship noises or sort of like little breath noises because it helps fade the sound out. And if you cut it too closely, it's too clean. It's too clean and it doesn't sound natural. So there's a whole world around us that we don't realize that exists in our ears and our minds and our eyes.
Oh, no.
Are you talking about like the mites that live in your eyelashes?
I knew he was going to go there with that.
You don't like the mites that live in your eyelashes and poop out the crusts?
Oh. You that's one of the things you like to talk about. Is
that's one of my go-to conversation topics.
It kind
of
is.
Hey. How am I going to see with all the crusts?
I got so much crusty mite poop. Mite poop in my eyelashes.
That's why.
Look it up, people. It's real.
That's why you have to be careful with making things too clean sounding because there's a lot of sort of like harmonics. You don't realize that harmonics are there sometimes, but when you cut them out, then you're like, shit, something sounds wrong. And it's because that the extra noises around it, extra noises.
I feel that.
It's all about the extra noises.
I feel that.
You guys were very, you're very patient with that comment. Thank you. Thank you for showing patience. I shouldn't have to thank people for that, but I feel like with us, I have to congratulate.
Like with us.
I have to do positive reinforcement and congratulate when we were all good boys. So.
I'm congratulating myself for not making a mental patient joke off of your thanking us for being patient.
But.
But Brandon Braga,
just have a good feeling about him.
Your giggles that will help you inhibit.
But I just have a good feeling about him.
Yes, you do. Brandon
just
Braga.
But I just have a good feeling about it.
That will help you inhibit your giggles. Your giggles. That will help you inhibit your giggles. Your giggles. That will help you inhibit your giggles. Your giggles. That will help you inhibit your giggles. Your giggles.
Well done, sir. Brandon Braga. This is so dumb. Brandon Braga wrote this episode, and people who are familiar with Brandon Braga will know that he is on TNG and Voyager, wrote a number of excellent episodes. He's particularly good at sci-fi ideas. He comes up with really clever ideas, but he has been known to have some issues when it comes to characterization and story structure and sort of plotting, particularly if he's not partnered up with somebody like Ron Moore or another, you know, Michael Piller or whoever, somebody else who can kind of apply some of that structure to it. And I think we see a strong example of that here with Cold Fire. This is not one of the kind of super like mediocre episodes. This is a frustrating episode in part because it has these little bits and pieces and little hints and flashes of interesting philosophical ideas or interesting plot elements or interesting sci-fi elements. I think it just kind of doesn't fully come together.
Nothing's very cohesive.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing that was really stuck together is at the beginning when they were talking about finding the Suspiria. Tuvok was like, you know, the caretaker was a nice person and was able to do what we needed, but it all fell apart and sucked. But yeah. What if Suspiria is not a nice person? And that was pretty much turned out.
That was the plot.
That was the plot. Poison. And it wasn't that hard to see that coming, even without him saying that. Like it was like almost no point in him saying that.
I think another thing that for me was a mild disappointment that
did you notice that also in Voyager, they don't say censor, they say censors. Well, and like in this episode, both Harry Kim and Janeway, both of them say censors. That's a good question. He didn't say censor this episode, I don't think. But in like other shows, everybody says censor.
Yeah. Okay. You just made me think, and now you made me forget what I was.
The ship of death.
I can't recall what
feel
point.
It
I, what
for
point
the very
I was
first
make.
Time.
All right, so I've forgotten my point, so we can just leave it at that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, do you want me to say censor? We were talking about censor. Oh, we were talking about Tuvok. Tuvok was saying, like, the caretaker was a nice dude, but what if Suspiria is not a nice dude?
All right, I remember.
I did it!
No, what you did was not at all helpful.
Yes, it was, because I just made you remember by talking about what we just talked about. It jogged your memory. You can't say that I had nothing to do with that.
Now that you mention it, it was very helpful.
You're just saying that to shut me up.
No, I'm just trying to further the plot line of the evening, the Dan and Patrick antagonism plot. Holiday madness fueled.
Holiday madness.
Antagonism. No, okay. The point that I recalled was, or that you made me think of.
I will kill you.
That I hadn't thought of previously was, I think part of my disappointment in this episode is, this should have ended as a miscommunication episode in the classic sort of both Star Trek, Miyazaki style, no real bad guy per se, but the antagonist is an antagonist in part because of some sort of miscommunication. And they kind of went halfway here, but they didn't go the full way. I would have liked it better if Suspiria was like, oh shit, I didn't realize. Okay, well, I'll give you another chance. I'll learn more about you. In the meantime, it turns out I don't have the same power as the caretaker dude, because I've been focusing my technology elsewhere or whatever. You know, just that I still can't help you, or maybe I can help you, but I can only help you by like 10 light years or something, whatever. I mean, that's not enough, you know, 1,000 light years. That again, a lost opportunity, because as it stands, Suspiria still comes across as sort of like evil and creepy, even though she didn't harm them in the end. Again, I'm gendering the alien worm creature. But yeah, Suspiria didn't cause any actual issues in the end, which is fine. But
and she just kind of showed up.
She showed up and left.
Because she seemed like really threatening. She was like, I want the ship. You can keep, you can keep the girl. But I want the ship.
Even after she left, it was still, sinister and creepy. It was not, okay, now we're like, we were just kind of like coming at each other from misunderstanding, and now we're like more on the same page, and so now we can be cool with each other.
Do you think Suspiria, there's a consumable called spirulina. Maybe that's in reference to spirulina.
I hadn't considered that.
There's also a...
That's probably it. That's probably it. I think we can just, you know...
There's also
assume we're right about that.
There's also a plant called Spiria, I think.
Yeah.
So spirulina is supposed to be good for you.
Yeah. No, I like your theory that something that starts with an S but is otherwise completely
asshole.
Etymologically unrelated.
You're an asshole.
No, I think it's a good theory. It's as good as any. I told you, Brandon Braga.
I will kill you.
not that impressive. All right. Okay. I think there's enough of that this night. Any other comments, questions, bits and bobs? I think we got most of them out.
That's
there.
That's it, man. That's it.
Yeah.
But I'm calling it.
But while Dan is thinking up the final point that he'll interject with here in a moment, once we are on a different
Patrick
topic.
Is full of attitude.
Sass him ups.
Sass him ups for real.
Because of the holiday.
They're on the bad.
Oh my God.
Sass him ups is on the bad.
a reminder that next week we will be discussing Star Trek, the animated series.
Will be.
Two episodes.
Ye.
Season 2, episode 2, Bem. And season 2, episode 3, The Practical Joker. So that's what you have to prepare for next week. If you were planning on listening next week, if you only listen to our Voyager episodes,
the hell with you.
No, Jesse. No, we tell them they can go listen to our back catalog of Voyager episodes.
We're going to play an educational, not a game. I'm just going to tell you some educational stuff. It's called an educational moment. It's called how the closed captioning differs from Chakotea.net.
I like these.
So
I like these a lot.
In the episode, the closed captioning spells Exosia, E-X-O-S-I-A.
Okay.
Is that how you guys would have spelled it?
I might have had like a C in there somewhere.
I watched the captions, so that's how I spelled
Chakotea
it.
Chakotea spells it E-X-O-T-I-A, not
Exosia.
S-I-A.
I would do an S. I would do an S over a T.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's another one. This is the second part two of let's figure out what's different about closed captioning versus Chakotea.net. Janeway says, our readings indicated a Sporocystian life form in this area.
Sporocystian.
Sporocystian.
We've been looking for that life form for months. In the show, that's what Chakotea.net says. Mm. Our readings indicated a Sporocystian life form. In the show, it says our readings identified a Sporocystian life form.
Oh,
that's
interesting.
That's a blatant. That's like that's changing the entire meaning of the whole thing.
It is different
because the Chakotea says our readings.
You're Mr. Science.
Our readings indicated. The show, it says our readings identified. Like that's blatantly different. That's like there's no excuse for that one.
Well, we got to figure out where Chakotea.net. What's the source of their?
Are they just
transcribing?
I don't know. Chakotea.net was also the one when that episode of TOS where Uhura like gets in that horrible scene in the Game Stars of Trescalon.
Yes, the Game Stars of Trescalon.
And in the parentheses, it made a point to say her clothes were still intact.
So
we knew that nothing bad happened to her. That was like an editorial like entry. Yeah. It seemed like I'm curious if they just listened to it or I want to know the source of these transcripts.
Do we know who's the power behind Chakotea.net?
I don't know, but they need to start using WHTTPS because they
are they still unsecured?
Yeah, it's fucking lame.
And have they been updated with any of the newer Star Treks?
Yeah, it's not secure. It's HTTP.
Can't get away with that these days, folks.
Luckily, I'm not sending them any data, but still,
Gotta lock down your shit.
Says there are no. It says there are no ads or cookies or any data transferred from your device to the site, which is why there is no SSL required. Okay.
All right.
It says, don't let any search engines fool you into thinking it is in any way unsafe for you to visit. Okay, so they're saying themselves, there's no cookies or anything, so you don't have to worry about the fact that it's HTTP.
But may I remind you, Dan, though you are far more schooled in digital security than I, you maybe don't 100% take the word.
Well, yes, obviously, yeah. Right. It's like, don't you worry. Like, we don't have
anything. They're saying right here.
It's perfectly safe. We're totally not trying to steal your data. It's understood that that's how you can trust the site the most, though, is if they tell you that it's a trustworthy site.
Yeah.
That's how you know you're good. And so you might as well hand them all your fucking credit card information and everything at that
point.
Might
as well.
Yeah.
Can we set up a website for people to do that, and then you can give that same message again?
I know it is kind of funny to be like, "Oh no, it's okay. They said that they don't need our data for anything, so that's why they don't need HTTP." But for whatever reason, I trust Chakotea.net.
Even though it's free and painless to get a security certificate.
Yeah, I know. That is weird.
Our website has a security
certificate. Yeah, I know. I don't. That is kind of shady. I don't know why they don't do that, but I don't know.
Secure SSL.
It's called Chrissy's Transcript Site.
Great.
They have a Doctor Who wiki on here.
Oh, isn't that handy? All right. So
I never got into Doctor Who.
We'll save that discussion for another day. It's got Doctor Who, or it's not got Doctor Who, because I
think of nothing but the flower.
Yeah, I didn't really get into it either. But
the ship of death.
That's it for us this week. Next week.
She's angry. She's angry. She's angry.
So we'll just
leave it. She wants to destroy the ship.
We'll just leave it at that. That you all are going to have a good time in between now and in between hearing this and in between hearing our next episode, either the one that's going to air next week or one of the other episodes in our catalog that you listen to, or
just deal with it.
Or the next episode in the playlist, which is a different podcast, which is
what
also perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with
that.
Oh,
totally.
Perfectly fine. So you do you.
Quality.
You do whatever
to
podcast.
To which part are you referring?
You know which part, Dan.
Like what?
Right. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
When he died.
That was a weird one to end on.
The life signs are gone. These remains could be responding to the caretaker's mate. If that's true, maybe we could use them to track her down.
And if we can find her, she might have the ability to send us home.
Everybody got that? Good!